And they're answering one another as they sing. Watch out, David. You're being flattered. David didn't take credit for killing the lion and the bear when he gave his testimony. He said, God delivered me from the lion and the bear. And that God would also deliver him from Goliath. Where were the praises to God? Can you believe it? These people, listen, you'd think this dumb bunch would have learned something by now. We've been studying the history of the Israeli people. But beloveds, I go to church every Sunday and find out we've not learned anything from these stories. I look in the mirror when I go to shave and I find out Floyd the Magnificent hasn't learned much either. Why weren't the women singing the praises of God? They were singing the praises of their great warriors. I'd like you to contrast. We need to see this. Quickly, quickly. Turn back to Exodus 15, verse 21. We just got to see this. Boy, how different it was in Miriam's day. Look at Exodus 15, 21. And verse 20. And Miriam, the prophetess, the sister of Aaron and Moses, took a timbrel in her hand, just like these girls were the instrument in which these girls were playing. And all the women went out with her with timbrels and dances. And Miriam answered them, "Sing it to the Lord. For He has triumphed gloriously. For the horse and his rider hath He thrown into the sea." Observe, Miriam didn't say, "Come on, girls, let's sing praises to Moses. Let's genuflect to Moses." Now, men and women, brothers and sisters, listen to me. There is no greater spiritual danger for you and me than when we're being flattered. Verse 8, and Saul was very angry. And the saying displeased him. Whoa, you've got the, whoa. Some of you have the right to raise your hand and say, well, why were they singing lies anyway? Or where did David kill 10,000 men? Typical, standard procedure. Do you remember all the Philistines that were killed after David killed Goliath when they broke and ran? And the people of Israel chased them back to Gath and Ekron, slaughtered them along the way. And then we have mention of another slaughter here in the battle. Who gets the credit? Who gets the credit in battle? Do you remember seeing movies of Roman triumphs and everything? Arcs? You know, here are all these foot soldiers out there hacking and chopping and everything. And then they come back to town. Does Joe Private get to walk under the Arc de Triomphe as the great conqueror? No. The commander of the army does. And the credit is given to him. I might add that when you lose, they never get a private. You never get a private or a corporal or a sergeant when you've lost a battle or a war and says, "There he is, everybody. That private lost the war for us." Never. Come on, you guys in here that have been in the military. Some general is going to lose his job, if not his head. You don't understand that? Well, I'll bring it home. If your company goes down the tubes, you don't get a secretary in and says, "There she is. Because of her, this whole company has gone..." No, no. A vice president is about to lose his job. When I was in the oil company for 14 years, the vice presidents were the whipping boys. Anytime we didn't make a profit, a vice president in that area lost his job. They were dead meat. And see, you thought, boy, I'm going to work like a dog and I'm going to get up to be vice president and then I'm going to shut the door and put my feet on the desk and say, "Soul, thou hast done well. Take thy ease. Eat, drink, and chase Mary." Oh, excuse me. Be Mary. But actually, that's when you were most vulnerable. And look what he says. Saul was very... "They have ascribed unto David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed but thousands. And what can he have more but the kingdom?" Oh, it's beginning to come to him. His suspicions. Who is that boy's father? Quick, Abner, tell me. And now he's hearing the praise and adulation. He knows from Samuel he's a neighbor. And sure enough, Benjamin and Judah Their two tribes touch each other. They're neighbors. He's a better man than you. And Saul could see him going, a better man to fight Goliath. And now the people are praising him. Saul watched enviously David from that day onward. Verse 10, and it came to pass on the next day, the evil spirit from God came upon Saul. Can anyone read? Came upon Saul. You know, I just thought you guys, you'd like to know what God has to say instead of what paperbacks have to say at least once. Upon Saul, and he prophesied in the midst of the house. I hope you all charismatic can see clearly that all prophecy is not of God. I don't know what he was saying, but I can almost, but I can use some imagination here. I'll take liberty. The son of Jesse shall not sit upon the throne. My kingdom shall last forever. And I'm going to make sure. Look at the next verse. And he says, as he prophesied in the midst of the house, raving prophecy. I've been to a few charismatic meetings with raving prophecy. And David played with his hand as at other times. There was a javelin in Saul's hand. That's normal, incidentally, around a palace, that javelins would be around the throne. It's not an unnatural thing. Kings dangle with them, and like when I was in the Marines, all the DIs had swagger sticks under their arms, and they were always tinkering with those things. Verse 11, Saul cast the javelin, for he said, I will smite David even to the wall with it. And David escaped from his presence twice. Chapter 19, verse 10 tells us about the other time. Therefore Saul removed him from him. Did you get that? As commander-in-chief of the army, and at the same time, he still played for Saul when he wasn't out in the field, when the demon would come upon him. It was in the contract, you know, in the job description. I want you to see that one of the greatest warriors that's ever lived could take a javelin at very close range and not kill God's anointed till God was ready for him to die. God had, through Samuel, said, this boy will sit on the throne. I want you to understand, you can't kill David. Oh, he's gone. You're going to get him. He's going to die when he's 70 years old. But right now, God has a plan for his life, and until he fulfills that plan, you can hound him, you can scare him, you can chase him, you can make him miserable, you can get him in tons of trouble, he can walk and look like a jerk. But he's in the hand of God. And the question is, do you believe God loved David more than he does you? I know better. God says, I am no respecter of persons. God didn't love David one bit more than he does you. He may have used David in a bigger, quote, ministry than God uses you. But let me tell you something. God didn't love Isaiah one whit more than he loves me. Isaiah may have pleased God more, but he didn't love him more. I have children and grandchildren. I don't love any of them more than the other. And I'm not even perfect. God has perfect love. I want you to deal with that. Now, it's really hard for me to believe this. But verse 12 said, Saul was afraid of David. Oh, wait. You can't write that verse. Was anyone listening? What just happened in the verse before that? Saul threw a javelin at David. The next verse should say, David was afraid of Saul. I'm trying to show you, when you have favor with God, things go backwards. They reverse. Can you believe that? God has the unmitigated nerve to say Saul was afraid. I want you to know there are people at your office, people in your family, neighbors that despise you, but they despise you because the hand of God is on you. Not because you're a jerk. Although with some of us, we got saved and we were jerks, and some of us it takes a long time to get that taken care of, doesn't it? I mean, some of us are, the gospel is offensive, but the problem is some of us as Christians are offensive. And that's not good, but the truth of it is. Saul was afraid of David. Surely, I looked at that and I just couldn't believe that it said that. And it says why? It says why? Because the Lord was with him and was departed from Saul. Therefore Saul removed him from him and made him his captain over 1,000. Ha ha! We finally found you and me. There we are. Woo! Big stuff when the women are singing our praises. Man, I used to run out on that field and they would say, he's a wonder, he's a dream. He's the captain of our team. Come on, gang. Where are you, Bill? There's a small college All-American halfback right there, sitting right there with glasses on, about my age. They used to yell and holler for him, too. Shirley says she still does yell it. I head out the door to teach. She says, sick 'em, Ralphie. Rawr! You know. To be the captain over 1,000 men is quite a thing. 1,000 men is a lot of men to be responsible for in combat. The Israeli army in Bible days, typically, not it wasn't always, but the typical battle plan was that there would be a commander-in-chief, might have a king or a judge, but besides him, there would be a commander of the army. Then the army would be divided into three equal parts, with a leader over each one of those three groups. Each one of those three groups would be divided into groups of 1,000. And there would be a leader over by the 1,000. Each one of those 1,000 would be divided into 10 groups of 100. And there would be a captain over each one of those hundreds. There was nothing smaller. 100 men, in other words, it went 100, 1,000, one-third of the size of the army. The army. Drew? It's one thing to be promoted to vice president. It's another thing to be made, after being a vice president, district manager. Not division. Not regional. District. In other words, David's position. See, Saul's hands are tied. David is too popular. He's too powerful in the eyes of the people. There's a limit to what Saul can get by with. See, real politicians understand these things. When I was in the oil business, there was a limit to how many men I could fire. There was a limit. You fire too many men, it makes you look bad. Don't you see what I mean? It makes you look like you can't handle men. And you're thinking about your own career. I remember one time, a vice president that was my big daddy had found out that I had been treated shamefully while on literally a secret mission for him. And when he found out, we were in a hotel in The Hague, Holland. And when he found out, we were sitting in there together, and he was drinking, and he threw his drink down, and he headed for the door and grabbed his overcoat. He was going to the office to fire all of them. There were about 12. I physically, literally, physically, grabbed him at the door. He was about 20 years older than I. I was about 36 years old. I grabbed him at the door. And I squeezed him and held him, wouldn't let him move. And then, just like in the Godfather movies, I said, you're powerful enough, but you can't get by with it. We want you to be senior vice president next, don't we? And if you do this, you won't. You're a clever man. There are other ways. You can fire a couple. But send the rest to Odessa, Texas. And sure enough, every one of them we sent out there ended up quitting before long. That's a true story. David has been removed from a great position of power. He still has a strong position in the army. And I have a question for all of us. How do we handle this kind of disappointment? Come on, gang. We have disappointments. Every one of us in this room constantly encounter them. I'm trying to tell you why I love David. I'm trying to tell you why God said David was a man after his own heart. Because when I read all of David, I see some sins he made. I can't believe God said he was a man after his own heart sometime. But right now, hey, yeah, this guy's quite a guy. He's been at the top. He's killed Goliath. Can you believe God even had the nerve to send him up against Goliath after he anointed him king? See, I would have thought, especially if I was reading paperbacks out of Tulsa, that once he was anointed to be king, there wouldn't be any Goliaths out there. Or if there were, David would just say, "You're not there." Now, David had to face him, and listen to me. Faith in God is one thing, but I'm going to tell you, when you go up against a guy as tall as this roof, as tall as this ceiling, you may have faith enough in God to go, and you can trust, but I'm going to tell you something. You got to get it together. There's a moment of soul searching before you can do it. It's easy to read about it. You hear what I'm saying? It's another thing when it's your turn to face Goliath. And beloveds, Goliaths come in all shapes and forms and sizes. And you're going to face one if you aren't already tonight. Saul removed him from him and made him his captain over 1,000. And what did David do? Well, it said, the next verse says, "And David went into a corner, sulked and pouted, and was angry at God and wouldn't pray anymore." Said, "I won't go to church anymore." Oh, I'm sorry, it doesn't say that, but golly, I thought it must. That's the way most of us behave, isn't it? You know, come on. Come on, this is a major disappointment. This is a major setback for a man who, hey, who would be king. My Bible says he went out and came in before the people. Do you know what that means? Let me tell you what that means biblically. That phrase shows up all through the Old Testament. It's one thing for me to lead you out as the leader of 1,000, to lead you out to battle. That's one thing. It's another thing for me to lead you in. It means my battle tactics, my personal bravery, my personal leadership protected you, that I was your shepherd commander and you were my sheep soldier, and I got you back. We didn't just go out to get the enemy. My job was to get you out there and bring you back. And when you're an officer in the Marines, that's what we're taught to do. To take you out, to accomplish the mission, but not to lose a man. I want to bring every one of you back. I don't want to write any wife a letter. I don't want to have to face any children. The Bible phrase, he led them out and led them in. That was the goal. My Bible says that that's what God's goal is for all of his people. That he led them out. Talking about it when he led them out of Egypt. He led them out to bring them in. See, how many of you know, it's one thing to be led out of sin. It's one thing to be led out of Egypt. It's another thing to be brought into Canaan. You hear what I'm saying? I mean, do you understand that when you get out of Egypt, you're in a wilderness? Anybody remember there was a wilderness out there? Come on, gang. You know, 40 years out there, remember? The object wasn't just to get them out. It was to bring them into something. See, some of you right now, you're confused about your walk with God because God brought you out of the trap that Satan had you in, out of sin that had you snared. But you don't understand what's going on. You're miserable right now because you aren't cooperating with God for Him to bring you in. Remember, when it was time to walk into the land, the Jordan was at flood stage. And God said, "Forward march, just walk straight in." The priest, grab the Ark of the Covenant, walk straight in. Oh, whoa, tilt. This is flood stage. I know, walk straight in. Oh, by the way, Josh, appoint 12 men so that when you get to the middle, they can pick up 12 rocks that are out there and take them to the other side. I want you to write the law on them. Cover it with some green slime. Walk out to the middle and get some rocks. How's about if you just throw them out, God? See, the natural mind never wants to try it God's way. That's what we're learning tonight. Last point, watch it. David went out and came in before the people. Hey, he went about his job as usual. And look what it says. And David behaved himself wisely in all his ways, and the Lord was with him. Wherefore, when Saul saw... See, there it is again. He saw. There's the problem. When he saw that he, David, behaved himself... Look at this one. Very wisely. He was afraid of him. Some of you work for Sauls. And you are not wise. And you're coming home whimpering and whining to your wife and everything's going wrong and you can't figure it out. It's because you aren't behaving wisely. See, the more Saul laid it on, Saul has demoted him and has put him in a bad spot and is looking for an excuse to really get rid of him all the way. So that he can justify it to the people. He can't just do away with the killer of Goliath. He's got to have justification where the people will say, you are right. I mean, he's just a young whippersnapper. I mean, he may have accidentally thrown that, you know, whirl that stone that day. But, I mean, we see that he's not really made of much now. See, Saul wanted that, but instead, David doesn't whimper. David understood authority. And he submitted to what Saul had put on him. How many of you understand it wasn't fair? Come on, gang! Did your daddy ever do something to you that wasn't fair? He over-punished? Did your boss misunderstand you? How about your wife? There's a good one. How about your husbands? How about your children? Children, how about your parents? Have they misunderstood you? And have they overreacted and really put it to you? And you know doggone well they're wrong. What do? Go out and get all your friends and say, let's talk bad about my daddy. Let's talk. Hey, here's the biggest sin in this room, probably. Or put it this way. It may not be the biggest one, but it's probably one that's well participated in. Let's sit around at coffee at the job tomorrow and talk about the man who pays us our salary. And let's talk about how he doesn't treat us right and how we ought to have this and we ought to have this and we need this and we demand this and we demand that. You can find it right there. That's what David did, isn't it? See, he behaved himself so wisely. He submitted to what Saul had put on him unfairly and did the best he could do with the job and watched after his thousand. He led them out and he led them in. In other words, he didn't get focused on himself. He stayed focused to the job that God had trusted him with. Listen, whoa, whoa, whoa. Only 1,000 men. This man has been told by the prophet of God, the judge of Israel, you will be king. When Samuel says it, you can take it to the bank. I wish we had more men of God like that today. Set up over hundreds of thousands of men when he's not even 20. Now demoted to 1,000. Beloveds, there's a lesson here. I don't know about you, but I can hardly handle it. I've had to do a lot of repenting this day. Verse 16 in our last verse, but all Israel... Do you see the word but? Why is the word but there? The contrast between Saul. Saul is afraid of David. But how do the people feel? But all Israel and Judah love David because he went out and came in before them. Yep, I got it. You know what? Let me give you the Floyd Jones translation of that one. Everybody loves a winner. He went out and came in. He led the army to victory and brought the boys home. Beloveds, you know what I've learned from this? Number one, I learned how quickly trouble follows triumph. I hope some of you will listen to that one. How quickly trouble can follow triumph. It reminds me of Jeremiah 45:5. Listen to it. Seekest thou great things for thyself? Seek it not. David didn't seek. God is dumping it in his lap. Why? Because that's God's plan for David's life. Now, God has a different plan for your life and mine, but not ultimately. Ultimately, God has the same plan for everyone in this room, including David, that we will reign and rule with him forever. You hear me? Your faithfulness as an individual to the call that God and purpose that God has for you, if you're faithful to that call, you can get greater rewards than David. Now you hear that. Of whom much is given, much is required. David was given much. Much was required of David. We talk about David and we read about him and we're learning about God. See, what we're really learning about isn't David. We're learning about God as we see how God dealt with this young man. So that we can understand how God's dealing with us and how God feels about us. The important thing is that no matter what God calls you to at that time in your life, that we don't whimper, that we do it, give God the glory. David was anointed and he sent him out to tend a few sheep. He did it without whimpering. He didn't say, I've got more gifts and abilities than this. And he did. See, I'm telling you, beloveds, the amount of rewards you and I get for all eternity have to do with how much we submit to the yoke God puts us under. And it's a gentle yoke. Don't strain against it. Submit to that one, and God will give you more responsibility. And then, when you get more responsibility, there may be a temporary setback. Hear me, hear me. It looks like David's going to make... Samuel is right. Look, whoo! One-on-one combat kills one man. Wow! Commander-in-chief of the army. Wow! Over 1,000. Well, not bad, but it looks like we're getting promoted in the wrong direction, right? But you hear me, because I'm going to cheat and tell you the end of this. David, right, makes it to the throne, doesn't he? So you hear this. It doesn't matter what happens along the way, beloveds. Gird the loins of your mind. Come on, gang. Trust God. What He intends for you to be, and He will make of you. David, God didn't need David helping him out to get him into the palace to learn how things were at the palace so that when David did become king, he would have some upbringing in it. God just did it. Would you stand? You're exhausted. So am I. I guess there is a P.S. Woe unto you when all men speak well of you. For so did they, the fathers of the false prophets. The women were flattering David. Woe, David, watch out. You're in for it. Be careful. Lastly, this story reminds me of 1 John chapter 4, verse 1. Try the spirits to see whether they be of God. Because you shouldn't believe every spirit. This spirit may well have been telling Saul he could kill David. He could thwart the plan of God. He could secure the throne for his son Jonathan. He could continue his dynasty and kingdom forever. All you've got to do is take that javelin and nail that sucker to the wall. You can do it. You're a mighty warrior. And man, at this range, you can't miss. Beloveds, learn from it. When God says you live even if a great warrior like Goliath and Saul are after you. Gary, take heart. God has a purpose for you. Getting you there, He isn't going to do it the way you'd like. And you and me. Will we look at David and rest in faith? Hear me, because God's going to get you there anyway. And the only issue is, will you enjoy it in the midst of miseries, trials, afflictions, women coming out and singing praises, and people throwing javelins at you the next day? Because that is biblical Christianity. Goliath one day, women singing praises the next, and people throwing spears at you the next. Let's pray and go home.